You're all invited to come closer.
Yeah.
And if anyone shows up late and, like, you know, wants to sit back there and, like, can't hear us and stuff.
I also don't have any problem kicking people out of this
hallway.
It just becomes too much to compete with.
Awesome.
I mean, that's good. We kind of
want
to
sit anywhere.
We kind of want
this is the space we have to do the workshop.
So. We kind of rather talk with everybody rather than just lecture. So that's what we're going to be doing.
Yeah. And we, as you can tell from the fact, we have a one might say teensy bit controversial opinion, especially within activist circles, on this particular issue. So what I encourage everybody to do, if you think that I am offensive and sex-neggy, is to write down a question and, you know, ask it when we are finishing up, or if we don't have time, you know, walk up and ask us. But in general, you know, we're trying to work through everything, sort of get it all out first.
Okay. Introductions. So, I'm Amos. This is...
I'm Katie.
That's Katie. We're from Boston. We're members of a group called Not For Sale, Survivors of Revolt, which is a kind of loosely knit, kind of action-oriented support group for people that have been in the sex industry in kind of any format, whether on the phone, in massage parlors, etc. So that's what's on our resumes, not really.
I totally wrote like escort 2004 to 2006.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not what's on the resumes. So I guess first of all, we want to talk about why people might choose to go into sex work, as it's called.
Well, I wanted to start with, has anyone here been paid for sex?
Never.
Cool. And I wanted to put this out there. There are tons of people working at many different areas and levels of the sex industry. Most of them never admit it to pretty much anybody, including their closest friends, or admit it months or years later. It's a very small group of people who are able to say it to much of anyone at the time. I told almost no one at the time. I actually put it over there. So, just sort of something that I think everyone should bear in mind. There are about 5 trillion times as many people in the sex industry as there are people in the sex industry and talking about it. And that almost certainly includes some of the people at this fair. It very well may include somebody else in this hallway. So,
cool. Alright, so as far as what choices in your life or what circumstances might lead one to make their money by having sex or doing other things to people, we kind of wanted to ask like a few like kind of open-ended questions for people to seriously think about. If you want to talk about like, you know, your answers, that's great. But pretty much. So if you've never been paid for sex, do you think that you haven't or that you won't do it or that you don't want to do it because of the social stigma, because you generally see it as a bad choice for yourself?
Because you have a partner who is monogamous or doesn't approve of it for some reason. And, you know, if the reason that you don't do it is a partner, why didn't you do it before you dated them?
And why didn't you do it and why?
Yeah.
Like a lot of women do.
And I'm not saying that to be condescending or rude. I've actually known quite a few people and been one of the people who did it and just sort of was like, oh, yeah, got an office job somewhere. So, you know, sort of I want people to think about why they, you know, would or wouldn't, and
what the circumstances are.
Yeah. Would it be fair to ask who has paid for some sexual workers' services?
Sure.
Yeah. Just since you asked the other question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. Has anyone here paid for sex? Okay. Okay.
Fair
enough. Basically, does anyone want to talk about why they would or wouldn't do it? Bueller? Bueller? Okay. So, what we see a lot of when we're talking to people about this is they're like, well, it's not good for me personally. And one of my biggest sort of questions when I hear that is, well, if it's not good for you, why isn't it good for you? And if it's not good for you,
why is it good for other people?
And how would they have to be different from you for it to be good for them? What is it that people believe about sex workers that, would make them see it as a preferable job or as something that they want to do?
Imagining, yourself as a sex worker for a minute, kind of spend a second and think about how it would necessarily have to change your relationships with your friends, your family, and your lovers. All of a sudden, you can't hang out with people on weekends or evenings, because that's when you have to go to work. How do you think that's going to change your relationship with your non-paid lovers? And basically, the whole point is that people that are involved in the sex industry are people that are just like everybody else, that have their own like emotional things to deal with, that want love and a happy life, and they're. You set me up, but you're going to say something.
And they're totally not naturally more sexual than everybody else about 99% of the time.
Which brings us to why people would do it.
People have sex for money.
For money.
Shocker, right?
Yeah. The unfortunate part of that, well, it's not even unfortunate, it's just obvious, is that means that it's capitalism's fault. It means that people have sex for money because the alternative is homelessness and or starvation or joblessness or mooching off your parents or your friends, which not everyone can do for a long period of time, and not a lot of people can do it for even a short period of time.
And it means that the sex industry is an industry. It means that it is a segment of capitalism, and that as such,
it shouldn't be supported by anti-capitalists.
Probably one of those things anarchists are trying to do away with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
going to use a gross phrase right now. The job of being a professional cum receptacle is really no, is it different from other jobs?
And that's a lot of what people hear. Well, everyone has to do something for a living, right? And yeah, everyone in this world does have to do something for a living. I'm not quite sure why people who actively fight the idea that everyone has to do something for a living somehow magically start repeating that like a mantra as soon as you start talking about prostitution. But in fact, everyone does have to do something for a living. Some people have to do worse things than others. Being a CEO is more fun than working at McDonald's. TV shows make lists of the 10 worst or dirtiest jobs for a reason. And
there are a lot of jobs that are absolutely dangerous and damaging to everybody that works in them, such as coal miners. Yeah.
In fact, this is why we don't hear about billionaires voluntarily becoming coal miners.
Because they don't have to, and they recognize that it probably sucks.
And again, you think about these different types of jobs. If someone held a gun to your head and demanded that you make a cheeseburger, how would you feel? If someone held a gun to your head and demanded that you hold still while they took off all of their clothes, got inside you, and basically used your internal organs to masturbate?
It's a little different than writing up a corporate mission statement or a meeting agenda.
And yes, they probably do both suck, but there needs to be a space to talk about some jobs sucking worse than others.
Another common claim?
That wouldn't be considered a job if somebody held a gun to your head to force you to do something.
No, we're talking about the fact, of course, that there are different types of force. If we are all being forced to do something or other to make money, and that is the argument that is used in order to support the idea of prostitution being like any other job, we have to admit that being forced to do some things is worse than being forced to do other things, that the same level of force is actually worse in some actions or cases than in others.
Is that a, like, objective or a subjective judgment?
Well, I would say that it's pretty much just an echo of what we hear on the news, on TV every day. I think that if there are lists on the news every day, say, of 10 worst jobs, then most people in the world seem to believe that an equal amount of force, you know, you have to do something for money, applied to certain jobs, is in fact worse in different situations.
Well, in most cases, those people are not, don't have any of those jobs necessarily. It might be just their opinion based on not having experience working those jobs.
I think you can say objectively, though, that some jobs are worse than others.
And I think that most people alive have said objectively that some jobs are worse than others at some point. Also, we really do need to finish this up, so if you want a pen or paper to write down your questions, that would be really helpful.
And also, she'll totally give you her email address to ask questions at length. That was the other thing you wanted to mention, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll totally give anyone who wants my email address.
Another common claim that people who are in favor of usually a more legalized approach to prostitution is that it as a job can be empowering. But we want to know what that means and what, how does somebody become empowered to sell their sex? Where does that power come from, and what type of power is that? When
I felt incredibly empowered as an escort, what I felt was that people were respecting me a lot as a small business owner. And that felt pretty wonderful for me at that point in my life, I'm not going to lie. I absolutely loved reading online reviews about my excellent phone manner, how I got a 10 out of 10 on looks and performance. Like, you know, I absolutely loved reading that I was prompt, reading that I made the appointment here and it was great and the hotel was wonderful, and basically feeling as if I was an incredibly talented entrepreneur. However, that is a pride born out of adhering to capitalist values, and that is a pride born out of succeeding at capitalism, and that is a pride that you're taking, you know, in capitalism and in your capitalist achievements. And I think that when we start to realize where the power is coming from, yeah, it feels great. And under the current system, it is absolutely the, you know, wonderful feeling for some people that they say it is. But it's not really consistent with anarchism, and it's not the best thing that could possibly happen. It's just something that's better than other options under the current system for some people.
And really, if you feel like you're a successful entrepreneur, you are in the tiny, tiny minority. And you can't always count on that to be the case. You can't. There's no way to guarantee that you're always going to be in the privileged 10% if you're trying to do something like sex work long term. In fact, if you do it long term, you will definitely fall out of that privileged minority just because you get older.
Which brings us to another point. We're trying to talk about different experiences within the sex industry. And the thing about that is that there absolutely are a small number of people within the sex industry who do have these fabulous, empowering entrepreneurial experiences. However, it's time to recognize that they are a tiny portion of the sex industry. Even groups that advocate very, very strongly and tend to work to minimize abuses within the industry because they are trying basically to promote the industry admit that about 20% of the people in it worldwide are enslaved. Now, if you look at the fact that, say, you know, Spain is officially recognizing that between 80 and 90% of the people working there are enslaved, you start to realize that the statistics are all over the place. People are measuring them very differently.
Somewhere around 60% is usually a good bet. 60% of people who are working in the sex industry are trafficked and or enslaved.
When you say enslaved, though, I'm just curious, like, what that, I mean, enslaved being that people don't have the choice to continue doing sex work. I'm not talking about agency. I'm just talking about their force when you use the word enslaved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely.
So they can't leave the industry if they want to. Yeah. That's what enslavement equals in this context. Mm-hmm. Is that,
yes.
Okay.
That they are being controlled by somebody and
they
cannot
can't.
Leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That number goes a little bit higher depending on how successful the researcher is at actually getting able to talk to a lot of people who work in indoor agencies who often aren't allowed, who often have their actual movement controlled, whether or not they're allowed to meet people when they're not working, whether or not they're allowed to just talk to people. That's also very tightly controlled as well.
And I should clarify here that regardless of their feelings about what's going on, somebody who is having their movement controlled, their money taken, who does not have the choice to leave, is being enslaved. And this is another issue that gets very contentious. People say, well, you know, really, we interviewed them and they don't seem to feel that bad about it. Historically, not every slave has felt that bad about it. There are records in the Library of Congress where former plantation slaves in this country talk about how they didn't have very bad feelings about plantation slavery in the Deep South in this country. So yes, people have all sorts of complicated reactions and feelings about this stuff. However, just because someone has a complicated reaction or feeling does not make them less enslaved.
Yeah, and it doesn't make slavery okay, just because some of them seemed all right with it.
Now, I should also add that within the people who are not being basically brought into it through immediate physical coercion, there are a fair number of people who have less immediate coercion or different push factors going on, who have things like addictions, poverty, who are not capable for whatever reason. Maybe they are trans and they just...
facing extreme employment discrimination.
They can't get hired anywhere. Maybe they're a person of color. Women in general have an enormous amount of trouble getting jobs that pay decent pretty
especially
much anywhere.
If they have children by themselves.
Women without college degrees, it's very difficult.
Non-English speaking.
And the list goes on and on. So there are a lot of people who you can't say this person is being immediately forced into it, and maybe they do feel completely, you know, empowered by the fact that, my God, they have found something and it allows them to keep eating. And that's really great. Like, I'm seriously happy that someone who can't find a job because they're trans is able to do something to pay rent and eat. But that still doesn't mean that we should embrace the current system.
Yeah. So you want to talk about approximate demographics? You didn't see this part.
I'm glad. Okay. So when we talk about who is involved in this thing we call sex work, it's good to sort of look at the different demographics worldwide and see who's doing it. Because if you believe that it's just people who happen to be more sexual, most of the time that's not true. It's people who happen to need money and not have other ways of getting it. For example, let's say people of color. Disproportionately involved in all sorts of prostitution at all levels, but especially they get pushed to the bottom of this sort of hierarchy. So, for example, 2% of Vancouver is comprised of First Nations women. 50% of Vancouver street prostitutes, when Melissa Farley went to interview them, she found First Nations women.
It's disproportionate, and that makes it inherently a kind of racist system.
And there's also... Got this long block. Oh yeah. Worldwide, because we always hear about things like sex tourism, and certainly it's not going on as much in this country, but it's a major industry in Thailand. They make a lot of money off of it in various countries, in South Asia in particular. You know, worldwide, the average prostitute is a person of color. And worldwide, they're not very likely to be the kind of people you see representing in this country. They're not as likely to even be English-speaking as a lot of people seem to think.
And as their advocates would present them.
Yes. So then there's also the very young, and you get this sort of filtered through the different news media. Again, it's very hard to get exact statistics. You hear in Lithuania they did a study, about half of the people found in prostitution there are underage. The average age for entry into prostitution in the U.S. Was in 82, which is horribly out of date. I wasn't even born then. Was 13 or 14. But if you are interviewing, and I've looked at this in, there's a guy who interviews people in Oklahoma City. He actually just, he interviews people in street prostitution and talks to them about what the trends they've seen are. They tend to talk about how everyone is getting younger, and this is what law enforcement talks about nationwide. And yeah, I hate to rely on law enforcement, but, you know, they're not going after anarchists in this case. They don't have nearly as much of a reason to lie. And there's actually a woman in Boston, Sergeant Kelly, who for about a decade solid was the only de facto exit service in Boston, who when interviewed said that she's starting to see the age drop. And she's in a couple cases within the past few years had to go and get infants out from people who were controlling them. And that means that the average age is going down. And it isn't going down rapidly, but it is slowly going down over the past couple decades, so that 13 or 14 in this country is probably no longer even accurate. Drug addicts is easy.
Okay.
So, a lot disproportionately are drug addicted. There's between about 92 and upwards percent of people in prostitution in this country, when polled, tend to have either alcohol or drug addiction. That is something that a lot of people start after, and that's also something that a lot of clients intentionally try to introduce. I definitely had clients try to give me crack or give me cocaine, and it is something where they have a very clearly in their heads the idea that they are going to get you addicted and try to control you. There are clients who really do have the goal of becoming your pimp. It isn't terribly common. You'll go on a lot of calls before it does happen, but there are people who try it. And there are people who call up agencies and then start to talk about, well, maybe I could drive you sometime. And that's something that needs to be addressed, is that sometimes these people are successful.
So, as far as people who advocate for a legal approach to, well, a legalized approach to handling the, you know, admittedly even by them situation for prostitutes, there's a couple different organizations. The breakdown of the people who actually are the organizations, start the organizations, and spend a lot of time doing advocacy for a legalized approach are generally far more wealthy than the average prostitute, have multiple degrees, are sociologists and people who make their careers talking about it rather than actually doing it, and that's not the same group of people. That's a far more privileged class of people who therefore can't have the same priorities as your typical prostituted individual.
They are overwhelmingly white. In many cases, they actually own escort agencies, and that's been true on the West Coast, with women getting involved in SWAN and SWAP, who actually own agencies. And I'm sorry, but if your union includes your bosses, it's not a union. And that's been really egregiously true in England with the International Union of Sex Workers, which is largely being run and advocated for right now by a man who owns a brothel, which is actually a franchise and apparently does more business than anyone else in the northeast of England. Additionally, he is going on websites asking for money from other owners, asking other owners to become members, asking customers to give money. And these websites, these message boards, let's say like Punterlink International, are encouraging people to join as allies who are in fact customers or owners. And that is a big problem throughout the industry. If you look at Coyote, which was the first sex workers' rights organization in this country advocating for unionization, in their heyday, about 3% of their members were prostitutes.
The founding member actually lied about her career in prostitution. She had never actually survived.
Is that Margot St. James?
Yeah.
She wasn't ever a hooker?
Nope.
Apparently,
she was revealed to have lied about it, and she's actually been arrested on pimping charges.
She publicly said she never was a sex worker?
Apparently,
or she's been accused.
No, apparently people said you were never in prostitution, and actually after that happened, she never again gave a speech where she asserted that she was a former prostitute and started to emphasize the fact that she was speaking for those who had no voices, meaning that she felt that she was representing prostitutes. But no, she was publicly accused and then never again asserted that she was a former prostitute. So there's that as an issue. In general, these organizations, even Spread the magazine, tend to come on strong saying we're for sex workers, you know, we're all about sex workers' rights. Yeah, for and by sex workers, illuminating the sex industry. Then they got called on it and they said, oh, right, oops, sex workers and their allies. Because, in fact, a lot of people involved in that magazine were not and never had been sex workers. And that was an issue. The list goes on. A lot of these organizations and a lot of these unions are getting constantly involved with people who actually run the industry or with people who identify as allies or with people who identify as sex workers because they are involved in something sort of tangential to the sex industry. I've certainly had people announce to me that they were sex workers because they did burlesque performance in their spare time and or taught some classes at the Boston Burlesque Expo.
And that's not the same thing as having your subsistence come from fucking strangers.
In fact, that's more like being a sex volunteer. The Desiree Alliance, I should add, which is the sort of umbrella organization on the West Coast for SWAN and SWAP and all of these other groups. The founding team members are 11 people. And it's all up on the website, which I don't even quite understand why they did this, because it made my job way easier. Out of those 11, 4 have been sex workers at any point in their lives. And one was a former sex worker, and 2 were sociology professors. 1 was a graduate assistant, 1 was a PhD candidate at a university. This whole movement is based very much in this sort of neoliberal, postmodern academia, which isn't something that people like to talk about much within that movement, but a lot of the strongest advocates, Carol Queen, people all over the board, haven't actually done it. A lot of the strongest advocates, like Margot St. James or Robin Few, for example, who is one of the founding members of the Desiree Alliance, continue to present themselves as workers, but have actually been convicted for controlling other women and selling sex with other women.
So, if the reality by subsisting by prostitution isn't as a lot of advocates and Spread claim to be glamorous, rebellious, or sexy. We want to know why that this specific misinformation and this wrong image would be heavily presented and promoted. Who would benefit from lying about it? Well, the fact is that sex trafficking and the sex industry is a $20 billion industry worldwide. There's a lot of money to be gained from it. That's not even really going into sex tourism too much, because I'm not sure it would get higher.
Airlines make money from it. you know, travel agencies make money from it. Gay cruises, like, notoriously make money from dropping men off on islands full of very young boys who really are being horrifically exploited and that shouldn't be thought of as a part of queer culture at all.
Because it's insulting to queers, quite honestly. So as far as the stigma of prostitution, that doesn't really, it's something that people mention and talk about, that there's a stigma for sex workers in the sex industry, but that doesn't really bear out in mainstream media. Because, you know, there's shows on television like Dollhouse, which is a drama TV series from the creator of Buffy about a brothel. There's a lot of stuff that basically, if you look around for a little while, you know, you look in the back of your local alternative weekly, and there's full color, you know, not cheap inserts all about places where you can buy access to other people's bodies.
With headlines like New Young Asian Girl.
Yeah.
And I really encourage people to pick up the back of an alternative weekly and look through exactly who's being advertised in massage parlors, because a lot of the, especially fetishization of Asian women, is really kind of scary and gross.
Yeah. So, because the mainstream media has recognized that prostitution is super profitable because sex sells, they do make a lot of money off of porn ads, prostitution. You know, you see the Playboy bunny on freaking everything. Ads for massages from very young, again, the new young Asian girl, like verbatim quote from an ad. Prostitution is not stigmatized in the mainstream media because it's consumption, and consumption is mainstream, and consumption is something that major corporations are very heavily invested in making sure people continue to do.
And
so what is the stigma actually affect? It affects the people that are selling it on the individual level. It doesn't, I mean, stigma, you know, Rupert Murdoch and all, pretty much every major mainstream news organization owns high-grossing porn companies. There's nothing alternative or rebellious about that, because your money is still going to the talking heads on TV. And so when we talk about stigma, it's really not prostitution or porn that itself that is being stigmatized, it's the actual prostituted individuals. Which goes back to our whole, who is prostituting people that don't have a ton of other options.
And it also, it says something about the attitude that the media holds. A lot of people sort of make blanket statements, the media is anti-whore. Well, the media loves to hate whores. They absolutely love to hate them. They say horrible, awful shit about them nonstop. And it's gross and it's horrible. It makes me feel bad to see, you know, TV show after TV show, news, all about, you know, haha, look at these hookers we caught. And generally just kind of degrading, ridiculous bullshit like that. But they're not degrading the industry, they're degrading the workers in it. And then after that comes the idea of, well, how do you persuade an alternative or an anarchist movement to be pro-prostitution, which is something that, believe it or not, people have been putting a lot of money into forever, since the first time Coyote was, you know, meeting up, and actually was founded partially with funds from Playboy. The mainstream, the corporate porn industry, has been and continues to fund these projects to make it look rebellious or alternative. And that is something that we really ought to be paying attention to, because we keep saying that we can't be bought and we can't be made pro-corporate. So
further, that runs into the issue of, is any major corporation going to actually fund a grassroots organization that advocates for its workers' rights? No. That's why there's something suspicious when Playboy is paying the funds to start groups like Coyote. who then go around trying to advocate for a legalized approach and unionization.
And that's something that people need to think about as well, because we look at all of these projects and we see, oh, grassroots prostitutes collective, sweet, they're fighting for their rights, they're a union, they must be great. But in fact, they're working very hard at presenting themselves that way, and it's not the reality at all. Also, they might do something by, like, say, have the people working for these organizations run around nonstop talking about the bias of the media against prostitution. You know, the media is against sex work. No, the media is against sex workers. They think sex work is pretty awesome and titillating, and they'll talk about it nonstop because they love it so much. And, you know, it comes off very much as like Fox News going on about the liberal media bias. It's just kind of a tool to make people think that your point of view is persecuted. Another thing that they do is talk about human rights abuses and say, oh, well, the solution is totally unionization. I mean, perhaps unionization would be a good first step, but it sure as hell ain't going to happen in a union where you're working in the union with your bosses. Even the change of language to sex work and sex posi, you know, like, sex positive is a term that was coined by Carol Queen in her book Real Life Nude Girl. I should say, it wasn't coined then, it was used in academic papers before that to mean feeling no shame about sex, but the current meaning, which is pro-prostitution, pro-queer, pro-S&M, kind of all jumbled together, that's totally something that began with Real Life Nude Girl, where Carol Queen started to write about it. And the thing is, there's no real reason to say that if you feel no shame about sex, you must be pro-prostitution. What a lot of that is an attempt by people with a certain viewpoint to be able to accuse anybody who disagrees with them of being puritanical and sex negative. And then even the phrase sex work is a phrase that was coined by a woman in Coyote. And Coyote, again, is this organization that got money from Playboy and spread by Coyote at a point when Coyote had a 3% prostitute participation rate. And you look at the activists with Coyote who brag about the fact that they've been instrumental in changing the language to sex work, and they are people like Priscilla Alexander, who helped found Coyote, who has never been a prostitute at any point in her life, but has given speeches about how she feels that her 4 years of dating experience in the private school in Vermont called Bennington College, where she was like kind of promiscuous, was exactly the same thing. Or at least close enough that she could speak for prostitutes. And she would get up and say, I am a whore. And when asked about it in more depth, she'd be like, well, I dated a lot in college. And she has an idealist.org page, which I also don't know why she did that, because I sure as hell looked at that. And she brags about the fact that she was one of the people instrumental in changing the terminology to sex work.
I really like Priscilla Alexander, just so you know. I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
I think she's done really good work. But I do hear you.
I have something. I missed the beginning, so maybe mention this. Way back, I think decades before you were born, I'm just remembering, there was a woman with a name something like Hollander, Xavier Hollander.
Xavier Hollander.
Hooker.
She's also a Holocaust survivor, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, she wrote a book called The Happy Hooker, and people sort of ignored the entire context of her life, but she was in fact a Holocaust survivor, and it kind of dismantles the argument that she was just like born naturally sexual and like chose it of her own totally free will without having ever had a traumatic experience.
But didn't she make it, I can't hardly remember it, but was it something like she like a joie de vivre sort of presumed attitude, her attitude towards life, supposedly that. But I mean, this makes a lot of sense when I'm reading. I presume that you wrote this or something.
It was a collaboration between us and someone online.
And what about is it Nevada where it's supposed to be legalized? Are there any unions there? Does anybody there get treated any better, or is it just as bad as everywhere else?
No, they get treated horribly there. There are sort of celebrity spokeswomen there, but there are also really awful conditions there. Again, Melissa Farley went around and tried to do some reporting there and had one of the owners shove a gun in her face and had the experience of walking around and seeing people being kept in their rooms and fed through slots in the doors. There are women who, and I believe this is one of the things that led to Margot St. James getting charges for controlling other women. There was a woman who had been an underage street-based prostitute and was actually channeled into one of those legal brothels by Margot St. James et al. Basically, she came to them looking for help, and what they mostly did was waited till she turned 18 and then took her to a legal brothel, but didn't provide her with exit services. And this woman testified, and other women, I believe, have testified that people from Coyote would actually come into the brothels and have the women in there sign statements that they love their jobs and love what they do. And the problem with that, of course, is that it was highly coerced. The brothel had an enormous amount of control over them. Nevada brothels have horrible conditions. It's controlled when the women can sleep, when they can pee, when they can leave the building. They're on for a week, then they're off for a week. And when they're on for a week, they have to be in the building, they have to pay to eat in the building, they have to eat at a certain time. Even Dennis Hoff, he owns the Moonlight Bunny Ranch, I think it's called. I mean, there's something not right with this man. He's a former client, and his daughter has a restraining order against him. I mean, and you see all these high-level men in the sex industry trying to portray themselves as some sort of rebels or freedom fighters. But there's something not right with them, and it takes very little digging to figure out that something's not right with them.
Is there a Q&A period after your presentation?
Yes, okay. And we're almost done with it.
And also a note about the literature. Pages 3 and 4 are mislabeled, and therefore you can just turn the second page around, it'll find it makes sense.
Pages
3 and 4 are mislabeled and they're backwards. Sorry.
Whoopsie.
That's what coin on the floor will do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to get that last part?
Okay. So, this is about the, we're going to talk a little bit about the concept of sex positivism. All right, if... So, basically the bottom line about sex workers' rights organizations is if they have... It says weirdly worded. Did you write that?
Oh, I'm sorry I messed up the notes. Yeah,
it's okay.
I wrote the notes, and it's making it difficult for her to read them. And also, I do the whole verbal diarrhea thing when I'm nervous, so... but, basically... the last thing is that a lot of these sex workers' rights organizations, one of the ways that you can tell that they're probably not legit is because they aren't actually fighting for all sex workers. The thing is, they'll come up with stuff like, okay, yeah, we're totally fighting for the rights of all sex workers. And then if you come to them and say, well, I've spent a couple years having sex with people for money, and what I'd really like as a sex worker is for sex work not to exist and more exit services to exist. They get extremely hostile very fast. At that point, they are advocacy groups for a political position and not groups for the rights of sex workers. If they were groups for the rights of sex workers, they would support sex workers
who want to leave.
Yeah. Okay.
Are we done with the notes?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm sorry, like, soldier through them like that. I'm just freaking out.
It's cool. Okay. So, I can still talk about the history of the sex positive movement. All right. We talked about how pro-prostitution advocacy is quite often actually about promoting consumption, because sex workers themselves, you can testify to this, spend a lot of time and money trying to increase their market value. And because it is ultimately not about having sex, it's about buying things. And the sex positive movement has made that a lot easier for a lot of people that are into buying it. It's been the status quo for, you know, the last 30 or so years. Sex positive movement has been embraced by, you know, Democrats, libertarians, anti-capitalists, liberals, conservatives, and even the Unitarian Universalist Church of Massachusetts. Mainstream Americans with no political interest will still espouse sex-positive beliefs because, you know, it makes sense to not really feel bad about your desires, and also it's being promoted to you all over the damn place. Because we use the word, because the term is sex-positive, there's an implication of the idea of sex-negativism, and so anybody that disagrees with or questions an acceptance of all sexuality as always good are portrayed as being anti-sex. Carol Queen, like, as we mentioned, author of Real Live New Girl, who was starting to use the phrase sex positive in academics, in academic context before, in fact completely disregards rape as a serious and unacceptable act. She's jokingly referred to Linda Marciano, who's repeatedly testified and passed lie detector tests while being interrogated about her claim that her years-long career in porn was actually video documentation of her brutal sexual abuse. Carol Queen thinks that's so hilarious that she calls her Linda, quote, "he had to put a gun to my head to get me to fuck that dog Lovelace." This is a woman who has nothing but contempt for people who have been years in years-long near constant rape documentation with video documentation scenarios. That kind of tells us a little bit about how, I mean, if you can honestly come out with kind of a ridiculing stance on somebody who's been through that kind of horrific abuse, the claim that all sexual activity that, you know, you're kind of into is good, or that all sexual activity that women do is good, is questionable. In addition, she has also suggested that anybody that disagrees with mainstream porn, etc., are suffering from an injured or atrophied hypothalamus that renders them incapable of pleasure from orgasm, which is, like, ludicrous. And therefore their objections are not based in criticism, but in a physical abnormality that makes them weird. Who else is really huge in there? Larry Flint, best known for publishing Hustler. Really huge advocate of, you know, progressive liberal causes. But, you know, also a magazine that regularly prints racist depictions of simian black men raping people and humorous depictions of children getting molested. By the way, his daughter has stated in her book that he spent a lot of time raping her. Also not somebody whose opinions on sex you should really be taking super seriously. Did it. Essentially what a lot of the sex positivism bit, as far as the mainstream media is concerned, is that it's part of an advertising campaign. The porn and prostitution industries, like we said, are something like $20 billion a year, and they've paid people, Margaret St. James, to basically give them a better image. And that basically amounts to the idea of it being rebellious and sexy, as being about as deep as, you know, the mission statement for Hot Topic. Major corporations spend millions of dollars a year connecting sex positivism and sex workers' rights to queer struggles and anarchist rebellion. But really, I'm going to quote you, the degree of acceptance gained by these policies within countercultural communities is the degree to which they are being co-opted and bought. Unfortunately, the co-optation of this, and especially in radical circles, is the reality and pretty much the status quo. attendees at Burning Man, anarchist organizers, even people that claim the title radical feminist, generally consider themselves sex positive, though most of them are not sure as to how it became so firmly mainstream or what the implications of that term in academia and publishing and grassroots organizing really means. And while it totally makes sense to embrace your sexuality and identity, that's not the same thing as supporting commercial, essentially, rape. And in fact, if you're really into healthy sexuality among equal interested beings...
Speak up.
Yep, sorry.
That just turned on, I guess.
It's okay. And if you're really interested in sexuality that is healthy among equal interested people, that means getting rid of such a powerful and difficult to overcome power differential that is subsistence for sex. Okay. You ready for that?
I mean, I don't know if I have a copy of the fact up here.
Oh, shoot.
Okie doke. So, first of all, we should figure out what time it is, because I really do want people to have a chance to...
Oh! We got plenty of time.
Well, when is this over? 5:45?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Well, I'll just ramble forever then. Okie doke. So, we have this back, and we handed it out to y'all, and certainly I'm sure that there are multiple people who read it and find it extremely objectionable. I get it. I would have felt exactly the same way, like, 3 years ago. So, when we put these questions out there, what we are essentially trying to say, and when we put these answers out there, we are essentially trying to put forward a position that has become increasingly marginalized in anti-capitalist and radical circles, to the point where anyone who starts talking gets drowned out in a chorus of, OMG, you're like so second wave. And that's really not a productive way to have a conversation. And this also comes from, you know...
Yeah, it's good to remember that these answers are based upon our personal experience, the personal experiences of the people we've networked with, which is not really a small group either, as well as, you know, kind of obsessive radical analysis of our experiences and the experiences of others. So, yes... That's what the fact is.
Especially someone like myself who worked at a few different agencies. I had the chance to come into contact with an enormous amount of women who had been in prostitution. Even at the upper levels of the industry, even among women who are getting paid hundreds of dollars an hour, which is much more than most people in the world get paid, there is not really a lot of good feeling about the job, and there isn't really a lot of safety. And I think that that's something important to state, because a lot of people are convinced that if we could just unionize to the point where everyone in the world could charge $300 an hour and, you know, get health insurance and not be stigmatized, that would somehow be okay. The problem is that, you know, indoor, upper class, very expensive prostitution does not protect you from getting beaten, does not protect you from getting raped. It makes it much less frequent, but it will still occasionally happen if you're in it for any length of time, especially in America. And it's not going to happen to you at the hands of crazed fundamentalists who totally hate whores. It's going to happen to you at the hands of people who love the prostitution industry and pay to see prostitutes all the time and are thoroughly invested in it continuing to exist and don't suffer from what anyone in the sex positive movement would diagnose as sex negativism.
Could I suggest a question to add to this list? Let's see. What are the underlying factors in human societies throughout millennia that sustain sex commerce?
Okay. Prostitution.
Wait, could you say that again? I'm sorry, I zoned out for a sec.
What are the underlying factors in human societies throughout millennia that sustains sex commerce?
Okay. A lot of people refer to prostitution as the oldest profession, and I think that's what you're getting at, is that basically if it has been so long standing for so long, why is that? Am I understanding your question correctly?
Question? Yeah. What is it about human societies that has created this commerce in a biological function that's partly reproductive, partly a bonding between two people or whatever?
Financial transaction, sexual in nature.
Excuse me?
Essentially an economic transaction that's sexual in nature, and I'm kind of wondering why they're called prostitutes instead of sex workers when they're actually workers in the capitalist context where everybody's exploiting the conflict.
Can we answer his question first and then get to you? I'm worried about everybody asking questions all at the same time.
So is it the exploitative nature of human societies that things get converted to commerce?
The thing is, the oldest actual profession is slave trading, which will, you know, kind of also indicate to you the kind of, you know, what it is about intrinsic, like, humanity that would lead, you know, commodification of sex to be, you know, a several billion dollar industry. As long as there are people that realize that they can make money from renting out their girlfriends or daughters or sisters, that people are going to do that. Particularly in societies in which those women don't have a ton of agency themselves, particularly in societies where they don't even know that they don't have a choice at all. I would say that would be us too.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that have been around for a very long time. Capitalism has been around for a fairly long amount of time. The exchange of goods or money has also been around for millennia at this point. And first of all, I think that the fact that something's been around for a long time doesn't necessarily make it good. And
I didn't suggest that. I was just saying, in human societies, it's been present for quite a while. And what is it about human beings that these things occur? What is it about a human being that we exploit one another or whatever? And
that's a
really huge question. I know. Well, I think that's a fundamental question.
Well, I wanted to ask something too, like a clarification thing, but I'm not next in line.
I'll get her and then you, and we'll do a stack. But that's a good question, and I'm not really sure what it is. I'd say that men on average have some, on average, are stronger than or larger than women, and I think that's been a really big factor in a lot of the sort of early history of this industry, is that if it's about who can overpower who, then that's going to be a lot about men overpowering women or male-bodied people overpowering female-bodied people. I think that a lot of the reason it exists in such an extreme and so much now is because what is going on is that we've got this sort of state of hyper-sexism and hyper-capitalism, and everything is consume, 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 and that people get indoctrinated from a very young age, and people think, people think differently because of the societies they're in, and I think that it's sort of evolved more to it. I think it would be possible to evolve away from it, but I think it's one of those systems that's self-perpetuating, if you know what I mean. Like capitalism, if it exists, then it becomes more and more so.
Thank you.
She's back there.
The question I asked before was about why are you calling them prostitutes instead of sex workers, but before you answer that, because you raised this issue, one of the ways women have, because they're so shut out of the economy and opportunity and all that, one of the few ways they can have any autonomous power is through sex work. Unfortunately, it's one of the few avenues open to them often, and that's why a lot of women make that choice. And also the concept of choice, I'm glad you're deconstructing that, because it's important to understand under capitalism. I'm sure you see that patch or tattoo of, it says capitalism, and there's a guy with a gun, there's a gun being held at a guy's head. And I think it is important to understand how our choices are important in those conditions, but for me, it's really important to talk about them as sex workers, because the human rights issue, working conditions, as you raised, are really important. I too am disturbed by this trend to glorify sex work when that's like sort of a reactionary position to take, so I should be wary of that. I'm glad you brought that up. But this whole worker thing is important because there's safety issues and exploitation issues, so not calling them the sex workers is a political choice. And
and I'm wondering about that. And I also want to say that sex work or prostitution or whatever isn't a comfortable thing, like abortion isn't a comfortable thing, but yet, again, we have to respect the right of the women to make that choice. And I feel like this legalization question, women who are already punished by poverty, patriarchy, and now forcing them to be punished by the law additionally, doesn't strike me as like a feminist solution. And just lastly, that if you're trying to be sex positive, in this culture, it's really not easy, because porn is like the intersection of capitalism and patriarchy, and doesn't set out a good, I mean, I'm really concerned for young people developing a healthy sexuality that is possible. And the thing about advertising, where women's bodies are sold all the time to sell everything from cars to God knows what, it seems, and yet we can't allow women to control their own bodies and choices. So I don't know if you can speak to any of that.
You just asked us like 5 questions at once. I'm going to address the first one,
sure.
And whichever of the other 4
can.
I can remember. But if you have something that you want to repeat.
Well, the legalization question.
Oh, the legalization. We're not actually advocating for keeping it illegal. And God, no, please don't think that. I am personally a huge fan of the Swedish solution, whereby it's not remotely possible to arrest someone for prostitution. My God, I never want anyone ever to be arrested for prostitution.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. We're not saying that we want it to stay illegal to sell sex for money, and please don't think that at all. I'm a big fan personally. I know not a lot of people are. It depends. But I am personally a huge fan of what they've done in Sweden, where it is illegal to pay someone for sex, but selling sex is completely 100% okay. You can't get arrested for it. And I know that a lot of people say that that is, you know, making it more dangerous and so on and so forth, but those people tend to be activists working for these sort of international, you know, advocacy groups, which do unfortunately get a lot of their press and popularity, and in some cases money, from much bigger sources that have something to gain from the sex industry. Again, Playboy has spread money far and wide to different causes that try to legitimate the sex industry. So has Hustler on some occasions as well. So I'm a huge fan of what's going on in Sweden, and I've managed to engage in limited conversation with women who are not working for these activist groups, who have been working for the past 16, in one case, years, since before the law went into effect, and say it was the greatest thing that ever happened to them, and it made their customers far less violent because their customers were afraid. as for the thing about sex worker versus prostitute, I don't think that the reason people who don't see it as a job don't see it as a job is because the word worker isn't in it. I don't stop seeing someone as a worker when they're working a cash register just because I call them a cashier instead of a cash worker. I think sticking that word in there really doesn't make a huge difference in what we're talking about. I also think it can be terribly misguiding, because I've seen a lot of people claim the label sex work for doing things that just all sorts of vastly different stuff, and it makes it easy to sort of conflate all of it. And I want to be very explicit when I say prostitution, that I am talking about, you know, intercourse for money.
But that's what sex work is, and I think it's a mistake to call it prostitution, and it's a very loaded, derogatory term that I would personally use for corporate America. But these human beings should be our workers. They're doing it for money, and they're working.
There's 2 prostitutes presenting this workshop who think it's completely okay.
I'm telling you what I think, which is sex workers is a term that's a choice.
One issue that I have with the term sex work, and this is just purely personal, and I know people will probably disagree with me, whatever. I don't think that having your ability to eat and pay your rent and raise your children and live your life under the condition that you have sex with 5 to 10 strangers a day is a legitimate form of female labor. I don't think that's anything anyone should have to do on the condition of wanting to be alive.
And that's my problem with the word sex worker, because I feel it legitimates a lot of people's experience of basically being raped 5 to 10 times a day for years. That's my personal objection to the term. I also think that sex worker gets used a lot to refer to people that aren't specifically exchanging intercourse for money. Like you mentioned, burlesque dancers often use the word the term sex workers, and I agree with what you say, that I feel that the word prostitute is much more specific about what we're really talking about, the actual transaction, and also, like I said, I don't think.
I also really object to the politicization of the term. I object to the fact that pro-legalization advocates coined it and propagated it. I object to the fact that the women most responsible for propagating it were not themselves prostitutes. And I just feel that because it is a label which was invented and then put on prostitutes from outside of prostitution, that it's really not legit. I think that that's a little bit different in the sense that language, I mean, yes, every word for everything, I guess you could say it was put on it from the outside because, I don't know, possibly, but I think that when you have a term that is sort of, this is the word for having sex for money, and then someone invents a new term as part of a campaign to disengage from the actual act or to invent a new word to sort of try and change the image and freshen it up. I see it as some sort of, you know.
It's a PR move.
Yeah, I see it as
well,
a PR move.
And work, and maybe it's not legitimate work, but that's what they are. It's sexual work.
Are you actually a sex worker? Are you a sex worker?
Problematic to you. I don't feel like I have to talk about my personal, to make a political point, which is it does harm women to refer to them as prostitutes. Prostitutes are a really loaded term in our society.
Why is it a loaded term, though? Is it a loaded term because it's an insult?
But this is it's a dehumanizing term, and so you no longer qualify for the protections. That's why people try to put sex work worker as forward as a term, that you are deserving of these protections and rights. You're a legitimate human being, even if, as you said, and I agree, that in a way it's like a form of rape, essentially. So I don't disagree with you completely, but I do think the language is important if we're talking about clarifying.
I think it's important, too. Unfortunately, I think that using the term sex work is part of a legitimization campaign, and I can't get behind that, basically.
I don't think sex worker is a broader term because it would include things like phone sex or, I mean, prostitute is very specific, intercourse for money, whereas sex worker would include, you know, various peripheral dominatrixes, things like that, where there may not be actual intercourse going on.
Well, that was part of your critique of why you don't use sex work, actually.
Yeah.
I have a really quick clarifying question, though, because, and yes, I have a critique, but I'm really clear, I need to know what your objective is, and you didn't really tell us, and I had read the description of, you know, because you both represent an organization, and one of the things I struggle with myself is, like, I don't think I have a dissenting agenda from you. I do disagree with some of your, what I do think is second wave about what you're doing is we're continuing to dichotomize. You know, like your sex positive criticism, well, then there has to be a sex negative. The issue is that, yes, there is, it's exploitative, it's definitely capitalist. I don't want to glorify it either, but I also don't want to hate on the movement, like the radical moves that did bring positive change. And I just wonder, well, why are they so incommensurable that we have to choose the second wave Andrea Dworkin model? You don't like it either, right? So it's like, why are we doing that? Where you're like inciting. And the other thing about academics, you know, like these accusations of like, well, the academic doesn't know. I agree that the personal thing, and that's why I need you to say your objective, because I think that what's coming out is that you want more of that personal side that shows that there are many different conditions within this thing that is prostitution. Do you know what I'm saying?
You seem to have two things you want to say. What's the objective?
Well, one was a critique.
What's up with the dichotomy? Is that what you're saying?
Well, my critique was that I think you're continuing to dichotomize, which isn't helpful in terms of what I call sex workers' rights. I hear what you say about prostitution, but what I call sex workers' rights, if your objective, what is the objective of your organization and what message, you said a lot of interesting things, but what is the message essentially that you're trying to portray? Because to me, it just sounds like we're hating on the radical sex workers movement, which which is fine, we can do that, but I don't think that's your sole intention. So.
Well, I don't know, I tend to think that the whole let's not create dichotomies, don't hate on anyone argument, I can see where it's tempting not to create dichotomies.
I say don't hate on anyone. Specifically
or people. Or not to hate on those specific people, but the thing is, as anarchists, we hate on banks, we hate on corporate structures, we hate on representative government all the time. And there's no particular reason why on this particular issue we have to tone it down and find some middle ground. I tend to be really skeptical of most calls for...
So you don't think there's a middle ground?
I think that if there are people working towards widespread acceptance of an industry and there's people working towards abolition of an industry, then they're going to be able to work together on infrequent occasions.
So that's your position, you're trying to abolish.
I'm having trouble getting people on this side, I'm sorry.
So I just want to say a couple things. One is that, like, you know, in terms of, like, that middle ground, I have heard, you know, Carolee says that, you know, 95 of her friends want out of prostitution for pre-standard friends. I've also heard her say that, like, decriminalization, they don't advocate for legalization, they advocate for decriminalization, and they don't think that decriminalization is the end all. They think that decriminalization will allow further examination of the issue and to create these distinctions of people that want out, people who want to remain in, you know, shed light on it, because legalization means that, you know, the government will be creating up laws, and what are they concerned with? They're concerned with laws. They're concerned with legitimizing prostitution for a certain type of clientele, and they don't have the same agenda. So decriminalization is really seen, I feel like, amongst that community as a first step in shedding light on this industry that has so many issues involved with it. And I just wanted to just bring another, I mean, because I think that your perspective is really valid, and, you know, in terms of the percentages of people that it applies to, I would not be surprised if it applied to the majority of people. You know what I'm saying? But I do also know of dominatrixes, for example, who don't like to have sex the first time, but do lead up to having sex with their clients, and lots of them do think of themselves as like therapists. You know, and I've heard many sex workers that do think of themselves as sexual healers, and they have a different relationship. It ends up with sex, but it doesn't start with sex, right? It's not like this one-off sort of relationship. And then I just wanted to also bring to like another interesting movement which is happening in Cambodia right now. Have you ever heard of Women's Agenda for Change?
I believe I have, but you should talk more about it.
They are a sex workers' rights organization. They organize both garment workers and sex workers. And, you know, they do take the labor approach, and as such, they only apply their critique to people, or they only organize among people that are 18 years of age and older. And, I mean, their whole thing is linking it to capitalism. You know, I mean, they would take this perspective that this forced labor in sweatshops is like, you know, slavery to a certain extent. And they link it to, you know, migratory patterns within capitalism, or sorry, within Cambodia, that is linked to the privatization of land that happened in 1989, which is now accelerating consolidation of ownership and things like that. And so I do feel like there is room to have that analysis of sex work as well. I just don't feel like these things are necessarily mutually exclusive is all I'm trying to say. Is that I feel like, you know, in conversations you'll see that, yeah, like Carolee will say, yeah, there's a lot of problems with this, and we want to, the first step to make it non-criminal for the women so that they can access public health services, so that they feel comfortable, you know, working on, they feel comfortable reporting their crimes to people. And in terms of where their energy was going, Carolee and like SWAT, they were putting their energy towards Angel's Initiative in California, which was an initiative to allow sex workers to have immunity with reporting crimes against them. And so I think that that is a, like, their initiative that they were shooting for and organizing around, Angel's Initiative, was an initiative that is common ground between a group.
You know, so I just wanted to point that out. You asked about the objective, and I just realized that.
Yeah, because someone had said, it sounded like you were talking about abolition, but I didn't hear that until this statement. But what is your objective?
I mean, as a group, a lot of what we do is sort of give support to people who have been in prostitution and want to talk, because typically within the mainstream or within movements which label themselves alternative, a lot of people experience trying to say something about how they don't enjoy the job and it isn't fun and get very quickly shut down by someone who feels that they are being, you know, a totally negative workingite or whatever. I think I would be lying if I said I wasn't an abolitionist. I'd also be lying if I thought that abolition was going to happen tomorrow. As an anarchist, for me to say I'm against a particular industry in general continuing is sort of a no-brainer. It's an industry. People are exchanging money for something. I'd like it to go away eventually. I doubt it's going to happen within my lifetime, but it greatly disturbs me when people lose sight of that as an end goal. We never talked to her, do you know? Well, you were saying that you don't... you were talking about, I guess, issues where there is common ground and unionization. First of all, I'm not really against unionization as an initial step. And within this country, I certainly would support a decriminalization measure, even though it wouldn't be 100% ideal because areas where it's totally decriminalized on both sides and corporations are not really, they don't have any checks on them, they don't have any widespread protest against them. It tends to just sort of proliferate and proliferate because it proliferates the things in the margins, like trafficking proliferate. And because of that, I think it would be wonderful to sort of, yes, decriminalization, but also not even as part of a legal approach, thinking outside of, you know, laws, because who the fuck cares, you know, about trying to create laws to reflect our lives. It's really impossible to make laws perfectly reflect your life. But I'd like there to be decriminalization combined with widespread protest against the corporate sex industry in the same way that there's protest widespread against the corporate everything else industry and against the mouthpieces of the corporate sex industry, the same way that there's protest against the mouthpieces of other corporate industry and against fake unions that don't really do much to help people and try to get them into unions with their bosses, the same way that there is against that in every other industry.
I don't have much experience with unions except for maybe Women's Agenda for Change. But the reason, like, you know, for example, Angels Initiative, you know, which would be the, I mean, that's, while there might be more mobilization around decriminalization of prostitution, it still hasn't been enough mobilization to make that change here. And then that's the first step, right? Because then, you know, amongst the population of sex workers now, like, I applaud you guys for, like, stepping out, and it takes a lot to do that. And I think that the criminalization means that there aren't going to be a diverse amount of advocates from within the industry. You know, and why are these women from outside making all these statements, you know? And I think that that's, like, one of the cores of the problem, you know? Because even if they were, it's hard for them to own up to that engagement.
I think there's quite a few women who do own up to it. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot of space for them to have any sort of radical feminist analysis of not having enjoyed prostitution, so people who feel that way tend to get funneled into conservative religious movements, which is really unfortunate because you have this person coming out of this really traumatic experience and they feel awful and they kind of hate their lives, and then you have this sort of almost predatory conservative Christianity that a lot of them manage to get involved with or that latches onto them, and that really scares me because I've seen it happen to people. But I think a lot of... Oh, I'm sorry. Ah! The vent is going off again. I think a lot of the measures are good ideas. I would be totally down for decriminalization. I would be totally down for unions that were actual unions and not advocacy groups. However, I disagree very strongly with the overarching goals and the majority of what sort of propaganda is being put out in order to support decriminalization measures. I support decriminalization measures because I don't think it should be a crime to be poor and need money. I don't support decriminalization measures because I think everybody in the country needs to think of prostitution as a job like any other.
And all I'm saying is that I think that you guys, like, it would be great for you to push to be part of their platform. You know what I'm saying? Because, like I said, I think that there is, like, for example, Carol Lee's making statements to me about, like, decriminalization is not the end. I mean, of course, and if you have a different end goal, then maybe, like,
not you guys. I don't know. I mean, like, I still think that there's a room for you on their platform. And if they have the most successful platform, you know, I mean, it happened with waves of women's movements, with, like, women of color having their issues represented that weren't represented before, and having different goals and expanding that. But, I mean, that's, you know, that's just, but there's so many people with questions.
I just want to second what she said. A lot of what you said I think is really great, and I think it's really awesome that you guys like brought forward your points. But I really do think that one thing that I've been having a hard time with listening to is that as though the radical sex workers movement is like this monolithic thing that feels only one way, because I feel like there is so much disagreement, including a lot of the points that you brought up, within the movement, and I think it would be really great for you to bring that into that space. And just like the point that you had made, where it felt a little bit like we were hating on particular people for their ideas around legalization, I feel like that conversation has evolved in so many different directions, and I think that's been part of the push towards decrim as opposed to legalization, and that's been part of what's informed people about, okay, well, whose voices are really represented here, and is there classism, and is there racism, and all of that within. And so I think it would be really awesome to have your voices add to that discussion as well.
I think a lot of the reason I come off as kind of pissy is because I spent a significant amount of time trying to add my voice to that discussion and trying to work within those movements, and what I find is that at the point when you're like, well, you know, really, you guys, most people don't enjoy this, and I wish y'all would stop talking about how trafficking doesn't exist, it completely, basically, tends to end with me getting poo-pooed and ignored. And I think that there's so much wrong with those movements, at least as I've experienced them, that I know that there are dissenting voices within them, but I also feel that the way that they currently are, it would be, and also because of the number of people within them who are advocating based on what they learned from reading Spread and really don't seem to have extensive experience within the industry or any at all, it would be very difficult to add my voice to that conversation. I'd love to do it. I don't know that I see it happening.
There's a lot of people writing, though, from and the kind of talking about trafficking that are successfully kind of the in between. And I'm not, when I use that, when I'm asked about middle ground, I'm not trying to, you know, whitewash your message. But I think like Kamala Kapadu, I think she has a really solid argument. So, but whatever.
I identify as male, so I feel even awkward like speaking, but I'm here and I have ideas, whatever. But I've always felt like exactly as your analysis puts forth regarding specifically prostitution and like how it's always like seemed to me as indirect rape, and I don't feel comfortable telling people I feel that way though, because I have no real reason to speak, as I am not a female and I have not worked as a prostitute. And I very much appreciate a forum where I can hear from people who actually have the right to speak about it, speak about it. I think like to tie in with the whole like word thing, like of sex work, it's like I feel like given my views of prostitution, it's like people who prey on prostitutes are usually like it's usually very malignant. It's like a power play, it seems, because I know people who are on the side of the wolves. So I usually find that they want to essentially rape, but don't want to consider themselves rapists. And luckily, with all industries and capitalism, money allows us to do that, like with killing animals and whatnot, McDonald's and whatnot. And so I feel people who are you put yourself out here, you're very vulnerable, you admit that you have survived this industry. So I feel for anyone to come down on you when your whole argument has been about every time I try to argue about this, people who are not prostitutes shout me down. It's like if she asks you if you're a prostitute and you're coming at her, you should probably answer because it doesn't matter.
But I wasn't a prostitute.
I'll be done when I'm done. But And the thing is, like, with the word, like, sex worker, like, it makes these people who don't want to realize, hey, this person is having sex with me because I pay them, not because they want to. That must mean something. Like sex work lets it be more euphemistic. You're not thinking about prostitute. You're thinking about sex work. Oh, it could be the burlesque dancer. Ultimately, it's probably the same as burlesque, you know, or as phone sex. And, like, the physical aspect of it makes it very different, which is why a lot of people don't go into that form of subsistence. And I feel like to abstract it entirely, last point, to abstract it from an anarchist discourse where people are like, what's your objective? It's like, you can't say stopping prostitution because it's all connected. You have to stop every industry. If you abstract it from an anarchist discourse, then it becomes just reformism. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, grass-fed beef that's slaughtered, or like, you know, gentler rape. So it's like you have two kinds of discourse, and they are incommensurable. Either you abolish all industry, including, if you're going to abolish people working in banks and wearing a little uniform, you're certainly going to want to abolish someone putting another piece of somebody in themselves that they don't even like because they don't want to starve. So, like, that's my
then
reaction.
Then call it sexual slavery, like wage slavery.
Are you a prostitute? Have you ever been a prostitute?
Why should I be interrogated and answer questions to you?
They've admitted it, and, like, therefore
yeah,
I respect
you're trying to coerce me and put me pressure when I'm trying to argue a human rights position about protecting women in extremely exploited contexts.
I'm sorry if you felt
I think, yeah, I am. And I think that choosing the right words is really important, but prostitution is the words that are used by the enemies of women, which I don't think you want to be, right?
Wow, you're both just, okay. So, you.
That's what it is.
I understand that you totally agree with me, and that, you know, you do have a lot of trouble, like, speaking about this as a male person. We should talk after the workshop, but for now I'm just going to say you might need to calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
I know, I have a lot of male issues to work out and
yeah,
when I talk
don't
to
yell
people.
At me.
But this is how I'm trying them. And experimenting with people, and then I learn, and hopefully I'll get better with time.
Alright, so again, like, you know, you need to chill out with the anger a little bit. I'd also say I do appreciate your point that it can't be divorced from an anarchist analysis, and I do think that that is something that is really important, because I do get very frustrated with people who are abolitionists but not anarchists, who don't really have a plan for how we're going to feed people after this isn't an option. I think that's a big fucking deal. And I'm not advocating for a world in which someone says, hey, get rid of prostitution, but leave everything else in place that makes people want to do it, because that basically means everyone starves. So that
means people do it anyway.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest reasons why I'm an anarchist. I have to admit a lot of my anarchist ideas and my anarchism personally developed from the experience of having been a prostitute, because I really wish that I had been in a position where I was guaranteed food and shelter. Now, as for... I know you didn't like raise your hand and ask a question, but I do want to address... I think you need... to look a little bit at what you're saying when you say something like prostitute is the word of enemies of women. There's a lot of enemies of women in the world. Some of them use the word prostitute, some of them use the word sex work. Enemies of women are, yeah, enemies, and yet at the same time they use the word whore, but the sex workers' rights movement tries to reclaim it. So many people are saying so many different things. It's hard to label any given word the property of any group. Oh, sorry. So many people say so many different things. It's hard to label any given word the property of any group, especially when members of Coyote are writing books called The Prostitutes' Rights Movement in Perspective, when people who identify as sex-positive sex workers will refer interchangeably to sex worker prostitution. I don't know that any of these words are the exclusive territory of any side. I object to sex work because as a phrase, because I see it more than any other word as being the exclusive territory of any side, whereas I see prostitute and prostitution as being just a word which refers to somebody who has intercourse for money. And I think that stigma which is attached to it, or the use of it as an insult, is something which 2 or 3 years from now we would see being used with the phrase sex worker, just because the definition is what people are stigmatizing and using as an insult, not the word. And that if everyone started using the word sex worker tomorrow, then like within a few months, people would start using sex worker as an insult. I also feel that it's somewhat of a questionable tactic to say, you know, prostitute is the word of the enemies of women. You don't want to be an enemy of women, do you? Because that's something where obviously I don't want to be an enemy of women, but really, is that absolutely necessary as an argument tactic? I don't know.
Well, then you might want to reconsider the use of the word.
Okay. Yeah, next.
Prostitution is foreign to my sensibilities because I'm more of a romantic. I'm a hippie. I don't think of going to a whorehouse. I mean, it just isn't part of my cultural context in that way. Yet I recognize that human sexual behavior is very diverse, and there are people that seem to have very indiscriminate sexualities. There's a climate of sexual scarcity and sexual frustration, both in the counterculture as well as in the mainstream culture. I mean, I think it's a symptom of other pathologies. It's kind of like that's how other pathologies, both economic, both cultural, are bubbling to the surface. So I'm wondering first, what do you think is the solution to sexual frustration in society, especially a large segment of men that are not very discriminate, that have trouble with commitment and things like that? That's not my issue, but I know that's a substantial societal issue. Also, what do you think about those who think that the solution is to spiritualize prostitution, the idea of like temple prostitutes like they had in ancient times, and whether that has merit, or whether is that just sort of a mythological fetishization of, you know, that's like a certain group of people's fantasies, but it's not really a solution to what most prostitutes want or what most prostitute clients want?
As far as sexual frustration goes, I feel like sex is the kind of thing that, you know, wrote in the fact that it's widely available towards people who are respectful of other people, who ask nicely, and that paying a woman to let you fuck her is not really the answer. As far as spirituality goes, I feel like while it's definitely possible, and I've read a lot of literature of sex workers who did feel that they were providing like a healing service for a lot of their clients. The question comes as to whether or not like those men should be getting therapy from women who they are expecting to have sex with them, and whether or not they should be seeing people who will help them counsel them through their issues, and not just kind of an extra thing that the prostitute is expected to do, like for anybody that comes in the door. I know I was always kind of resentful when I was working, when people wanted to have long conversations about their hang-ups with me, and I was just like, dude, I'm here for the money. dude, I haven't eaten for a couple days. Like, please don't tell me about your mom. And there's also a lot of really bizarre things that religions have done throughout the centuries. You know, ritualized slaughter, and I don't really think that it's necessarily entirely accurate all the time to say that temple prostitutes are, that the existence of temple prostitutes, you know, a couple centuries ago is evidence that prostitution, the act of prostitution, I should say, is inherently spiritual, because then, you know, you also have to consider, you know, the idea that then ritual, you know, human sacrifice might also be inherently spiritual, and if we can look at that and object to that and say that's not necessary and that it's kind of, you know, oppressive and wrong, we can also look at the reality of, you know, the temple prostitute who spends her life living inside a temple and having sex with people who come and make donations. If we can be critical of that, I mean, kind of meandering. But was that a good enough answer?
Yeah, I was just curious if you had been exposed to that sacred whore body of theorizing, how you play off of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems that, like, neither of you belonged in the business, and so you were unhappy with it, but, like, you're not typical of you know, porn stars or whatever, and so you know, maybe it's just you didn't belong there, and maybe there's another group of people that have different fantasies and different emotional dynamics. And
the problem being is that if you ask a porn star and she says she loves her job and you wait 5 years and she tends to change her mind, there aren't...
You ask her in a context where it's obvious that you don't expect her to answer in a certain way. A lot of porn stars are... You're really just watching videotaped prostitution, and you edit out the part where the money changes hands or where they have to, harangue a woman to do anal when she specifically says in her contract that she's not going to do it. And I don't know what the specific statistic is, but it's extremely common for women in porn to walk into a situation being very clear about their boundaries and to get either bargained down into doing things that she really didn't want to do, or simply told that if she doesn't do them, they'll send her home.
And blacklist her.
And yeah, if you want to work, you have to do this. There's also the fact that women in porn's market value goes down with every single movie they do quite often. There's a few really good articles about it. I should have.
I do think it's interesting and significant that you've investigated the people that are acting as spokespeople for the industry, and that there are these corrupting incentives and dishonesty to what they've been presenting to us, because I wasn't aware of that, and so that does affect the quality of the information that we're getting.
I really hate that argument, well, maybe it was just you, because it tries to individualize a problem that's systemic. Like, no, The problem is totally not with the system. The problem is with your individual reaction to it. However, if my individual reaction to it is also the individual reaction of 95% of someone in a decriminalization movement's friends, that says quite a bit about how widespread that reaction is. I also think that when you see a porn star who has more corporate handlers than pretty much anybody anywhere in the sex industry talking about how much she loves her job, it doesn't mean an enormous amount, especially given the number who change their minds later in life. When I talk about the sort of predation of the religious right on people coming out of the industry, I'm talking a lot about porn stars. An enormous number of them go super religious, and I see that as sort of being born out of extreme trauma and desperation and not having any way to voice that without going to a church, because there aren't really a lot of anti-prostitution movements outside of the religious right, unfortunately. And what was that other thing you said? You asked about... there was something...
Spirituality.
And then the other
thing... How to manage sexual frustration in society and different people. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I think that... sexual frustration sucks, and and everyone should be allowed to have sex, ideally. However, you don't need it as much as food or water, and there's really no reason to prioritize your frustration over somebody else's human rights. So that's definitely a big part of my analysis, is that
Is matchmakers a solution? Maybe instead of what the world... Maybe the world needs fewer prostitutes and more matchmakers.
Some people argue it's a form of prostitution.
I would, too. And anyway, I think that there are a lot of people who are deeply sexually frustrated as a result of our society's pushing ideas onto everybody about what can be attractive and just shoving them down there from such a young age. And there's so many men wandering around who are extremely frustrated because they're not getting laid, because we're in a society that hates fat, bald guys. That's a big deal. I'm specifically thinking about some of the stuff my roommate has said to me, because he's a very large guy, and he talks about with me sort of how he came to a point where he realized that his own sexual frustration was not something that would actually make him support prostitution. And we live in a world where people hate big women so much, and we live in a world where people hate older women so much, And I think that rather than create an artificial solution to an artificial problem by introducing prostitution to deal with the problem created by media representations and by sort of weird beauty hierarchies and by the beauty industry wanting to sell us makeup and diet plans, we could get rid of the artificial problem and stop producing it, and that would be sort of my ideal, would be instead of having people who were older or overweight or just ugly, whatever that means, you know, have to pay to have sex, try to create a society that valued them as sexual beings.
That's a quick question.
Yeah.
What is the word in Sweden for prostitute or sex worker or whatever? And like, what was the word translate to? Do you know? Because I wondered if that would be interesting in light of the conversation.
Oh, I think they're having the same conversation there.
Oh, okay. And my other question is, have you two, do you write articles or are you writing a book or are you thinking about it? Because it sounds like you've got a lot of valuable information and insights that would be nice to share with a larger audience, unless you think it's too dangerous because you think the people invested and in charge in these sex industries are going to come after you or something like that.
But that's no joke. That's happened.
That has happened to people who make public objections.
Aura Bogato wrote actually a private email to a coworker about her dislike of Hustler, which they forwarded to Hustler magazine. And then
who spent several months depicting her in cartoon form getting raped and beaten.
Oh,
and it was hilarious. Like, it was a joke, but it's at the same time it's a very real consequence, though she has a blog.
Well, and there was also another woman who had a blog whose identity was discovered at one point by some guys on Slashdot who actually tracked her down, started making harassing phone calls to her neighbors, who had guys come to her neighborhood, track her down, and physically threaten her unless she took down her blog. It's no joke. Gail Dines has hate videos up about her on YouTube. There's all sorts of really intense and crazy shit that people will do. I don't put it at the level of a corporate conspiracy. I think that some people love their porn and have too much time on their hands and are really deeply insulted if you try to take it away as if it's a personal insult to them. There are very real cases of abuse. At the same time, yes, I do sometimes write articles.
In the back?
You were first, though, and she also has hand up. I just was wondering about the ties between prostitution and mental health, and just briefly, just if you talk about like things that maybe you've experienced, people you've seen, and what happens to your mental health. Like, do you feel that
as a result or as a causation?
Right, or either or do you feel there's like a before, during, or after? I don't know how to describe it, but I'm just asking about in general mental health.
The kind of link between.
Yeah, if there even is a link.
Yeah, well, there definitely is some kind of link. Do you know the exact percentage of prostituted women in, what was it, Toronto, in Melissa Farley's study, who something like two-thirds of women polled had symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Of course, that many of them had symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder from things that happened before they were in prostitution, and at that point it becomes a question of have they normalized certain things happening to them to the extent that prostitution doesn't seem much different. I should also say she was specifically interviewing people in street prostitution in that particular study in Toronto, which probably has a much higher rate of PTSD symptoms because they regularly have things happen to them which don't happen at other levels in the industry. I should say, though, that if people are coming out of porn who have been porn performers and saying things like, gosh, everybody I knew in the entire industry had been molested as a child, and
which is not an uncommon sentiment if you read interviews with with porn performers. I was going to say, which is not an uncommon sentiment, in which I think I've read in almost every single interview with a porn performer, that it was extremely, extremely common for them to have had experiences of child sexual abuse, which
for one thing, as a survival of child sexual abuse myself, is something that can be really difficult to stop internalizing. And it, you know, it really helps you if you're trying to think of rationale as to why. No, I really am okay with doing this for money, because you know you have experience with it, and on some level, even if it's a level that you don't really feel comfortable admitting, it's a lesson that you've been taught about your own personal value, and about how much your objections to what other people decide to do to you with you. Is very much like doesn't have a lot to do with what you actually need, and has a lot to do with what other people want. So many women in the sex industry spend a lot of time like either dealing with post-trauma in ways that are, you know, unhealthy. They do it in other ways too that aren't specifically sex related, but For many people, reliving experiences that were specifically, you know, abusive to them, or that they specifically remember from their childhood as being abusive, is really just replaying it, and it's not really healthy. As far as the kind of other link of causation, people that have mental illnesses in the first place, who have a difficult time getting or holding jobs for any period of time, sex work is the job that you can literally do if you're, you know, spun out, like if you're strung out on whatever you're doing, if you haven't slept or eaten for a few days, you don't have to be on time. It's the kind of job that you can literally do lying completely still and staring at the ceiling, which is why people that face huge employment discrimination, like we were saying about, you know, in racist societies, people of color, trans people, people with any, you know, any kind of mental health issue that is not, you know, something specifically that they would get in a job that would keep them from holding steady work, something that is always there. So whether it causes or results is kind of fuzzy. But it's definitely a logical conclusion for a lot of people that just don't have any other job options and don't have anybody helping them out.
And I can definitely speak more to that. My own inability to hold down a regular job was one of the biggest deciding factors for me. I totally had a job, it's just that I was not remotely functional enough to go to it and work for 9 hours and have lunch somewhere in there and come home and not want to kill myself. Like, slightly negative comments from my boss would just send me reeling for the rest of the day. And that's, you know, it's very hard as someone in this country who doesn't have a lot of money or resources or parents taking care of you to go actually find decent mental health care. All I knew was that I couldn't function at a regular job. And I tried to leave at one point and get a job as a waitress, and I just still couldn't function. I couldn't do it. It was the only job that I could do because all I had to do was be there. And at the same time, you know, again, there is a lot of... there is a lot of sort of normalization that goes on, again, of people who were molested as children. I know that for me, I consciously thought at one point as I was getting into it, oh, this is totally familiar, I'll just pretend it's not happening. And that's like, that's an awful thought. Well, gosh, I've done this before, I'll just do it again. But although the statistics vary widely, pretty much any study ever done has indicated that people who do various jobs within the sex industry tend to have higher rates of molestation as children than people outside of that. Depending on what they're doing, the rates change. People in street-level prostitution tend to have different rates from people in escort prostitution. You tend to have different rates from people who are stripping, for example. It's all very different. But at the same time, they are elevated in pretty much every aspect of the industry, and that's a real issue. It's definitely a big problem to have any sort of mental illness in our society, because our society just doesn't give a shit and expects you to just soldier through, and that's not always possible for everybody. As far as the after effects go, though, like, in a lot of ways, being an escort for a significant period of time made me much worse, because it didn't seem unusual anymore to date men twice my age all the time exclusively. It didn't seem unusual anymore to have people do really physically abusive stuff to me during sex or after sex or whatever. And it didn't seem unusual anymore to kind of detach all the time, or to go over shopping lists in my head during sex, or to like try to sneak a peek at the clock to see if my hour was up. And that, I mean, that's something that I do tend to struggle with just in my life, is actually not being, oh, well, I'm having sex, when do I have to change the cat's litter again, you know. And that's something that definitely got much worse for me after doing that job, because it just became totally normal to be like, you know, okay, so I need to go get some waffles, and just constantly have that going through my head while I was having sex.
The little response to that too is that I've heard that really high rates of dissociative disorder, like your last comment reminded me of that. And I heard this rumor that I never looked up, that there was some study done in part thing that never published, that like it was up in the 90s in terms of dissociative disorder, which completely makes sense circumstantially.
Yeah.
That would be a high.
Can I say that no one's arguing that it's extremely harmful and dangerous, and the word rape and murder go together for a reason, often because that's what women face, it's a dangerous industry. And the goal as feminists is to move women out of that danger, like you seem to be interested in doing, and out of that still circumstances, more empowering circumstances. And I think it's really valid and important that you're critiquing people who glorify the sex industry as some kind of empowering. Whatever, maybe some people do feel it's empowering, but largely those are coerced choices, and it's really unfortunate, as you said, you're facing employment discrimination, that women are forced to make those choices. But it's like, okay, does that mine laborer really want to go down that mine shaft, or is he doing it if he has no other choice? And if he has a right to sell his labor, consenting adults, a woman has a right to do what she wants with her body, whether or not we are crazy about what choice she's making. And calling her a worker recognizes the fact that she deserves protection and rights and control over her own labor and body. I'm not really legitimizing prostitution or whatever, sexual slavery, but rather a woman's right to control and decide what she's going to do with her body. That's really important, whether or not you approve of what her choice is. And yeah, at the UN over these trafficking issues, some people want to call it sex work, and the Bush administration and the right wing are very stubborn about calling it prostitution, so it concerns me. People who are interested seem to be interested in the safety of women, that you're so reluctant to see that there's incredibly political implications for your word choices. Okay, so
I know there are political implications for my word choices. I also don't think that every single time I happen to have something in common with the right wing, even though I'm taking a completely different approach and I'm an avowed anarchist who's done anarchist activism for a while, that means I'm automatically a conservative, or that I'm siding with them. I understand that the majority of people in this country who are anti-porn and prostitution are religious conservatives, and obviously that's not where I am. And I don't think we're ever going to agree on the proper language here, but I will say that I completely 100% do believe that, you know, the goal as feminists is to move women out of bad situations, and I completely 100% do believe that I don't have the right to judge another woman's choices. This is not what I'm talking about, judging another woman's choices, though. I think that people are making the best choices they possibly can under existing circumstances, but I absolutely deplore those circumstances.
We all want to change that. We don't want capitalism.
Yeah. Thank you for your comprehensive and insightful presentation. And I have a sense that, you know, it was very traumatic for you, and that there's still, you know, it's palpable that trauma in your, you know, in your demeanor. I think sex work, prostitution, whatever you want to call it, child abuse, sexual abuse, all these numerous things that happen in human societies, these are symptoms, and there are issues that we have to deal with, we have to examine and be clear about, that create these horrible options that people are forced to, limited options that people are forced to choose.
The main argument that if there's really not a ton of meaningful choices for you, it's not really a meaningful choice for you to make. If your options are shit, you know, we're not blaming you for choosing among several bad options. You know, I don't think I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with the decision of the woman who decides to work as a stripper rather than work in McDonald's, because the benefits of the cash benefits of stripping are obvious compared to minimum wage drone labor in, you know, a fast food establishment. I'm not saying that we disrespect her decision to do the best that she can in her individual circumstances, but if you're choosing between crappy options, it's not really a meaningful choice. You know, as opposed to other people who have more advantages in life, who have been, you know, conferred more privileges, who are able to make a career decision among, you know, a couple hundred options. So that's what I think I'm trying to say.
I also think it's really problematic when people who have a couple hundred options and for whatever reason choose prostitution, insist on, you know, having their voice be heard, wanting everyone to know that this is their choice, 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 respect my choice, because I tend to feel like when people start to do that, they're speaking from a position of incredible, astronomical privilege and drowning out the voices of not just the majority of those in the actual industry, but the majority of those in the industry who aren't as privileged as them. It's like they're asking, you know, hey, pay attention to me, pay attention to me, ignore that homeless lady, pay attention to me, and that really kind of freaks me out.
In the neighborhood and the schools that I grew up in, I had very little awareness of any child sex abuse going on. Like, if somebody had asked me how common was it, I would have said very rare, like 1 in 10,000, 1 in 20,000, something like that. What I've seen in talking to people in the counterculture, especially like in the goth scene, it seems to be almost endemic. I mean, I'm astonished at how often I run into it. And so what I'm curious if you have any thoughts about what that correlation is. I mean, so many of the women that I've been personally interested in had that in their background. I have no idea why. I mean, is it that it's much more common than we realize, and the kids that I was going to school with were also having, you know, a high, very high percentage, or is that somehow, like, I've heard someone theorize that, like, emotional pain helps keep people awake, and so we don't fall into the cultural trance that most mainstream people do, and so maybe we're more called to look for alternatives, so we end up as neo-pagans or hippies or goths or anarchists, and, you know.
I would say that it was a lot more common than, you know, you realize at the time. Gosh, I don't know how many of my friends from, like, elementary school and high school that I found out after the fact were going through horrifically abusive situations. One of the ways people deal with abuse, and I know that this was, you know, tested out in my life as well, is that one of the easiest ways to deal with it is to just not talk about it. The other thing is that, you know, if you kind of wanted to talk about it and tell other people, you'd be very careful about who you told. Because people view you a different way after they know that you're a survivor of abuse. Whether they view you as damaged in some way and they feel so sorry for you or they want to fix you or whatever, I mean, usually that's not what you're actually after. You just kind of wanted to talk about it and you know, kind of get it out there. But I would say that, you know, if it seemed before like it was less common, it wasn't.
I would also add that most forms of rape tend to be invisible to most men most of the time. Just because of the world we live in, it's a lot more likely to happen to women, and women are a lot less likely to feel they can discuss it with men. So someone being your intimate partner makes them a hell of a lot more likely to bring it up with you. But if someone isn't your intimate partner, odds are minuscule they'll bring it up with you. And that's probably a lot of what was going on when you were in school. You're raising your hand again.
Yeah, I'm going to head out, but I just want to say thank you guys. It's really, really great. And I was wondering, I didn't catch the name of your organization.
For Sale Boston?
Or I don't know if it's an organization, if there's a website that I prefer for more information.
Yeah. I was dumb and didn't put that on any of the information. Oopsie.
Well, our organization is Not For Sale Boston. Not For Sale Boston.
Not For Sale Boston. Okay.
Yep.
And you can email us at notforsaleboston@gmail.com.
Okay.
That's pretty easy. And we can also hook you up with, like, all the stuff that we read online as well.
And books, too.
Yeah.
Who are some of the people that you read? I'm curious. Because you keep mentioning Melissa Farley, is it? Or
Melissa Farley did prostitutionresearch.com. She and several colleagues did like a 5-country survey.
Mm-hmm. And a 9-country survey.
And a 9-country survey.
And who else do you read? You would read? I mean, I'm just curious.
There's a lot of different people.
Because we're clearly reading the same different things.
Yeah, there's a lot of different people. A lot of people have problems with Melissa Farley. I think she has had some flaws in her research. I'm suspicious of the fact that people jump on her when there are about 5 other male researchers putting out pretty much identical papers. I feel like there's something kind of like looking for the woman doing the bad research and, you know, getting really kind of scary, angry with her going on. But she's also like super nice. But I mean, also a lot of what she does and learns is very valid.
I'm curious about the other people too.
Yeah.
There's it's tough for me personally because I start reading and then I see something like Sheila Jeffries talking about, you know, oh my god, the trannies, and I'm kind of, that's something I really can't get behind in traditional radical feminism that totally freaks me out, as they'll be like, you know, porn is bad and also transsexuals are just hallucinating or something. So I tend to be kind of deliberately selective. I'd say that it definitely, this will come as a shock to no one, read, like...
I was going to say Nikki Craft.
Yeah, I definitely think that Nikki Craft is pretty cool, though she doesn't do a lot of writing, she tends to do performance art. I do read Gil Dines and Robert Jensen, that's not going to surprise anybody. I have seen... and do try to pay some attention to, she's a former porn actress, what's her name? She's got videos up on YouTube. She's like a total conservative Christian, and I have to zone out some of what she says. But at the same time, I do sort of view it as something that it was like sort of this weird far-right religious predation on her, and if I can listen to the place where she was coming from when she got into it, that sort of helps a lot. I would say, who else is really good? I don't know. I have like a
you have an extremely extensive
list. Yeah, I have an extremely extensive list of people, and I can totally email people because I've got like this ridiculous resource list
that we forgot to print.
But definitely reading, just even going to like prostitutionresearch.com and seeing some of what Farley says can help a little bit.
I was maybe being contentious, I'm sorry, because I was wondering, because you had mentioned, it's like I wonder if you come across some really conservative-minded arguments, because at times, because I'm still wondering about this divide, you know, like the divide with the radical feminism, and that's why I was just curious. I am now that you're saying these thoughtful comments, I am interested in the reading list, and I would email you, but
I do read some Dworkin. I find some of the things she says brilliant, and some of them kind of like what? But at the same time, you know, some of her arguments that I think are ridiculous are things that Pat Califia has also said, so I'm kind of like, well, some people are just weird, okay. But I think that there's definitely a problem of running into people who are conservative or people who are very anti-radical, and it really sucks that that's sort of the dichotomy going on right now. If you're against it, then you're assumed to be conservative, and conservatives will try to cozy up to you, and that's like a huge part of the anti-trafficking movement, and it totally freaks me out. You know, I'm serious. Like, it bothers me. I'm against legalizing. I'm not against decriminalization. I prefer decriminalization to legalization.
Legalizing is a different radical sex workers' rights movement is also against legalization, because that puts government restrictions on black market.
Pro-abolition, but I do agree that there's probably a decriminalization phase that happens first. I do totally run into like scary conservative stuff, and I think that a lot of that is something where there needs to be a real movement created of people who are abolitionist but not Southern Baptists. I don't know, like, it is a big deal, and I'm not going to pretend it's not. I can only say that, you know, I try to do my best to distance myself from and not side with people like that, as I try to embrace many radical feminist, you know, ideas without embracing the idea that trans people don't exist, or there's something wrong with them, or that they're like, you know,
that radical feminists are against the rights of people who identify as women.
I think that that's a problematic issue. There are people currently identifying as radical feminists who aren't. I identify as radical feminist, and I'm not against, I'm not against the rights of trans women in any way. However, I think that earlier radical feminists of the 70s and 80s, and many of the radical feminists...
It was like the grossest thing about the second wave.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some problems there, but you keep bringing it up to discredit their advocacy of women who are sex workers, and again, there's a political term. I'm not sure why...
Well, actually,
I
think you're a little confused.
We want to abolish capitalism and all forms of exploitation, but we don't want to punish women in those circumstances.
I think you're a little confused. The people who I'm criticizing for being anti-trans are actually also anti-prostitution. I'm not saying this about the radical sex workers movement at all.
Are you covering up radical feminists?
No.
That's the thing, is it means different things to different people. The first wave of radical feminists and the people who are listed as being a radical feminist in like fucking Wikipedia and dictionaries and stuff are different from people who are trying to sort of reclaim the term now. And what I find is that there's a group of people referring to themselves as radical feminists, and I end up calling them radical feminists because that's how they refer to themselves, who tend to really embrace anti-trans philosophies, and that many of them are the same women who are anti-porn, though not a majority of them by any stretch of the imagination, but enough of them that it's something I do try to distance myself from and disavow. And there are other women calling themselves radical feminists who are not at all part of the same movement and don't embrace the same thing, and it's... It makes it hard because the phrase has largely lost its meaning. So radical feminists of the earlier generation who sort of coined the term are the ones I'm talking about when I say that. I realize that there are younger people or people who have identified as radical feminists since then who consider themselves to be sex radicals or sex worker advocates, but those were not the ones I was just talking about.
Email addresses or websites or anything else? Okay.
Not for sale, Boston.
Yeah. At gmail.com.
Yeah.
There's a really great blog run by a woman who is both sort of anti-porn and prostitution and a radical feminist and anti-capitalist and sort of all that great stuff, who's kind of this ex-punk rocker star who's like really hilarious and awesome, and I'm kind of like secretly a little bit in love with her. So if you ever like feel like reading blog.iblamethepatriarchy.com, I would highly recommend it.
Sorry, can you just say it again?
blog.iblamethepatriarchy.com. Or even just Google I Blame the Patriarchy. She's hysterical.
Good luck with finding a good job. Thank you.
Yeah.
What have you ended up doing economically after getting beyond that?
I'm a professional puppy writer.